This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Western Michigan University's Office of Sustainability is holding a summit on Thursday at the Fetzer Center. A panel discussion is planned, and the keynote address will be given by Second Nature CEO David Hales. Before he assumed the leadership role at the Boston-based advocacy organization, Hales worked in the Clinton and Carter administrations. He was also director of the Michigan Department of Natural Resources from 1988 to 1991. David Hales, thank you very much for being with us.
Good morning. It is such a pleasure.
Tell our audience about Second Nature. What does it do?
Second Nature started about 20 years ago with the mission and intent to focus on higher education as a crucial point of leverage in the transition to sustainable societies. There was then and is now, I think, a broad consensus that business as usual is not going to lead to a world in which we will have all of the human well-being that we have in the past. And Second Nature started with a focus on higher education as the key fulcrum for educating people about the challenges that we face, climate change, but much more than climate change, and focused on the fact that essentially the leaders of modern society, at least in the U.S., will by and large be coming from institutions of higher education. And because there was such a greater opportunity for higher education to affect the way we think about the future, that made it a responsibility for higher education to step up and refocus its own ways of thinking about the future.
Are colleges and universities perhaps good laboratories to develop best practices for other large institutions?
Very good. Tremendous opportunity there, as Western Michigan University is a clear exemplar and clearly demonstrates. There are any number of entities across our country which are essentially campuses, if you think about it. There are county complexes, city complexes, national institutes of health, corporate headquarters, where there is a mixture of transportation nets and facilities, sometimes overnight facilities, the way campuses are. And campuses generally have a very good relationship to their local community and the local businesses. And by demonstrating that there just simply are smarter ways to do things, including smarter economically, then those practices very quickly translate out into the communities around the college campuses, usually because the people who are doing the work, the contractors, the architects, the people who are doing the design, are part of those communities, and the skills that they learn in the market for college campuses are immediately translated into good news for the communities.
Now, you mentioned that Western Michigan University is an example of a campus which has very strong sustainability practices. How widespread is that? Are other colleges and universities in that class, or are many of them in that same class?
Very many. There are, let's say, roughly 4,000 campuses, colleges and universities across the country. Almost 700 of those have explicitly committed to achieving carbon neutrality before the middle of the century. And that's, in a way, just the tip of the iceberg. The American College and University President's Climate Commitment is perhaps the largest organization, maybe the largest civil society organization in the world that has committed to reducing greenhouse gas emissions to zero. But the institutional impact of that and the hard work by many campuses that are not part of the commitment is extensive in the U.S. And it's extensive for a couple of reasons. One, students look for it. They want to go to a campus that they think of as environmentally responsible. They want to go to a campus that they believe they can learn skills and trades and knowledge that will help them live in the future and not the past. So that's a tremendous influence on the behavior of college campuses, but so is the economy. And it's just abundantly clear that we're in one of those wonderful moments in time when the right thing to do is also the smart thing to do, particularly from an economic standpoint.
How do you get the idea of sustainability to spread a little more from college campuses to other things, as you say, that we would think of as campuses, large corporations, perhaps healthcare institutions. Is there enough of that going on in other places right now? And I guess I'm wondering, how do you get it from the college campus to other places where perhaps they can reduce their carbon footprint?
I think a good idea almost takes on a life of its own. And when you have proof of concept with sensible, very, very smart economic practices, you can reduce your expenses. You can help balance your budget. Those ideas spread very rapidly. Often they spread, by the way, not just from campuses to corporations, but from corporations, the military and elsewhere, back to campuses, because the same forces are driving us in all of these areas. I think campuses have an identity as a community. College presidents pay attention to other college presidents. College campuses pay attention to what other college campuses are doing, because in a way we're all after the same students, and we're all in the same business, the creation of knowledge. But the common sense approach that says, you know, we can't behave the way we did in the past because we're going to create a world in which we really don't want our children to live. Secondly, that's not bad news necessarily. The good news is that we can live better and wiser, and we can make changes that are in our own economic interest as well as being the right thing to do. And that kind of sense pervades, all decision makers in society. Some have an easier task of making those changes, and some can get on the front edge of that change, and higher education institutions are among those kinds of institutions that can make those decisions more readily and implement them more quickly.
The United Nations is issuing a report this week on what climate change means worldwide. Reading from the Christian Science Monitor story, global warming will disrupt food supplies, slow world economic growth, and may already be causing irreversible damage to nature, according to the UN report that is being put out to put pressure on governments to act. When people hear that sort of very serious message from something like the UN, I suppose they might wonder how much a sustainability program on any college or university campus can really change the game one way or another. Why is it still important?
It's so important because the way we change the game, as you put it, is to change ourselves. The change towards sustainability starts in our own value systems. It starts in our own behavior. It starts in our own actions. There's no institution, even the United States government, which is big enough unilaterally to actually make a change and have that change affect the patterns of consumption and the patterns of pollution across the whole world. Governments are important. Every institution is important. And the momentum that can be developed by individuals stepping up and paying attention to their own life patterns is evident in the U.S., evident in communities like Grand Rapids. We have a long way to go. There's no question about that. But the change in the way that we're beginning to think about the future, the recognition that the future will not be like the past, it's not a straight line projection. But we do affect it. We choose it. And because we can choose it, we can choose a better future. And every individual and every institution that participates in that choice and in that conversation makes a difference.
But is the change going to be difficult? I mean, you say it's a better future, but is the change as we get there move from our current spot to a future which is, we hope, more sustainable? Is there going to be some pain as we go through that?
Of course. Of course. There will be occupations that parts of the country have relied on in the past, which will be very difficult to sustain into the future. Coal mining, for example, in West Virginia. The good news is that there are really, percentage-wise, very few people in West Virginia who are still dependent on that industry. But the pain is real for people who have, through no fault of their own, learned a set of skills, and those set of skills now produce a product that contributes to the deterioration of the entire planet. And so there are things that we will have to learn how to do different and better, and there are retraining opportunities that we're going to have to create, and another key role for for higher education. And all of us are going to have to change a little bit our consumption patterns. We'll have to take a look at what's really necessary. We'll have to take a look at the components that we buy. We'll take a look at the supply chains. And in doing all of this, the great bonus for us is that we all become more resilient. The impact of climate change is unmistakable. It's not a matter of theory or projection. It's happening now. We can see it around us. And you can see it at the local level throughout the United States. The U.S. National Climate Assessment will be another one of these studies that is going to come out toward the end of April. And it will document in almost 2,000 pages a study done by over 3,000 scientists that looks very specifically at what we're seeing now, what we're very, very likely to see in the future. If we pay no attention to that, the cost will be very, very high. But if we do pay attention to it and both reduce our emissions and start changing often simple things, the way we build into that future, we have to ask different questions in our strategic planning and in our physical planning. There was a time when I was president of College of the Atlantic, we could afford to talk about building wooden buildings because we're above the 45th parallel and termites couldn't survive over the winter. Well, that's not going to be the case in the future. There was a time when we had to use only a certain size culvert to get water off of our campus. But we know now that the weather patterns are going to be such that in New England, there's going to be tremendous increase in precipitation. And everything that gets built from highways to parking lots on campuses are going to have different ways to accommodate all of that extra water and move it away. There's just a wide range of very practical questions that we can ask ourselves, come up with answers that make sense in the climate of the future. And that's really our challenge. And in every one of those situations, there are new job opportunities. There are calls for new skills, new skill opportunities for jobs for students coming out of college and university, and jobs for many people who want to retrain from a set of skills that essentially looks backward to a set of skills that essentially looks forward. So it's not good news in the sense that we do have to change, and change is tough. But with change, there's always opportunity, and higher education has a particular responsibility to help find that opportunity.
Now, you said that climate change at this point is undeniable, but you know that there are many people living in Michigan this winter, which has been a tough winter, and they're saying, well, wait a minute, if the Earth's getting warmer, how come we had 9 snow days and my children had to stay home from school and it's been so cold that it's almost painful to go outside? How can that be when the Earth is getting warmer?
Well, there's a great difference between climate and weather. But even in the case of weather this winter, if you look at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration maps of global temperatures through the month of January, you'll see that there are a few that are colder than usual, and those tend to be concentrated in the Midwest and the Northeast of the United States, a band that kind of starts in Minnesota and runs down to the Carolinas and back up through Maine, where I am at the moment. And we still have snow, and it's still cold. But the rest of the world around that has temperatures that are much higher than usual. There are ski resorts in the Alps that have no snow. There are ski resorts in the western part of the United States that have no snow. There is record warm temperatures in places from Alaska to Siberia. So when you look at it in the global context, this has not been a colder than usual winter, although if we look out into our backyards, we are sure going to see icicles and snow. And that's a pattern that has been predicted for a long time by the climate models. The winds that surround and circle into the North Pole are essentially kept there by a wall of high pressure. And as that wall of high pressure deteriorates, consistent with a broad change in climate around the country, then those winds can break out It's the thing that you've probably heard the Weather Channel talk about as the polar vortex. And as that cold air breaks through the circle of high pressure, which has surrounded it, built a wall around it in the past, it can dip down as it has this winter and have extremely tough weather conditions happen on a local basis. But the overall change, the overall trend, is unchanged by those local weather conditions.
David Hills, thank you very much for your time.
It's been a pleasure, Gordon. Looking forward to being out in Western Michigan, looking forward to the events at Western Michigan, seeing my good friend John Dunn, who has done a tremendous job as a leader in the American College and University's climate change commitment and in the local area, and Harold Glasser, and just the team at Western Michigan, which is a good example to colleges all around the country.
David Hales is the CEO of Second Nature, which is based in Boston. He will be the keynote speaker for a sustainability summit at Western Michigan University being held Thursday at the Fetzer Center. This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.